decades tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's past. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. There's mystery in this hour, later on an episode of Danger with Granger from 1956. But first, it's yours truly, Johnny Dollar. A CBS broadcast from the 17th of March, 1953, called The King's Necklace Matter.
John Lund as...
Johnny Dollar.
A king there was with his premium paid even as you and I, but he sold his soul for a pot of gold, for rubies and diamonds, precious and old, even as you and I.
Marty Fenton.
Hi, Johnny.
Why don't you hit the sack, Marty? You'll feel better in the morning.
I'll feel better when I see you, Johnny. The plane leaves LaGuardia at 7:15 a.m. I'll meet you here in Miami when you get in.
Good night, Marty.
There's a king involved, Johnny. Not to mention a quarter of a million in lovely stones. Gentle sea breezes waft the palms of Los Baños. And an old friend needs help.
You?
Me.
I'll be there. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Home Office, Eastern Indemnity and Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the King's Necklace matter. Expense account item one, $134.70. Airfare and incidentals between Hartford and Miami. Waiting at the airport, as promised, was your Southern States Agency manager, Marty Fenton. Over a cup of brew in the coffee shop, he briefed me on the assignment.
Ever hear of King Rawlings, Johnny?
King Rawlings? Financial tycoon, wasn't he? Retired some 15, 20 years ago?
That's the lad. About a year ago, he wrote a policy on a quarter of a million dollar necklace that he owned.
Which has suddenly turned up among the missing?
Not yet.
Well, you expect it to?
Well, we got a letter from him day before yesterday. Claimed somebody attempted to break into his safe. Thinks they were after the necklace.
Well, I'm usually sent for after the crime's been committed.
True, my lad, true. Oh, pass the sugar, will you please?
Sure. So what am I doing here now?
The policy's coming up for renewal, Johnny. There have been nasty rumors circulating around about Rawlings' present financial condition.
Afraid he's starting a build-up to put in a fraudulent claim?
Been done before. The boys in Hartford get pretty stuffy about that kind of skullduggery. I want you to check around Los Baños and see what you come up with.
Is that where the gentle sea breezes waft through the palm trees?
2,000 imported ones. Los Baños is Rawlings' own personal island off the coast of Cuba. He's lived there for 20 years, surrounded by his memories, his trees, and his collection.
Of precious stones?
Uh-uh. People.
Mr. Johnny Dollar is one of the...
Oh, your plane's waiting, Johnny. I hired a little amphib to fly
you
down.
Let's not brush off the collection of people, Marty.
Who am I to prejudice a stalwart investigator about to brave the dangers of Rawlings Isle? On your way, lad. May the blessings of Eastern Indemnity follow you even unto the ends of Los Baños.
After 1.5 hours of white clouds and blue sky, the plane put down in an even bluer sea and taxied over to a landing dock on a picture book island. King Rawlings had collected palm trees, all right, but I didn't know about the people. From where I stood, there was nothing to be seen but the landing dock, a gravel path, and those trees. The path led through a seemingly deserted tangle of exotic flowers, sweet-scented vines, and the ever-present palm trees. It was like a tropical paradise, peaceful, serene, untouched by men. I just about decided that nobody on this island ever made use of this lush garden spot when I learned that I couldn't have been more wrong.
Over here, please.
Well, hello, wherever you are.
Over here, in the clearing to your right.
Hello, who are you?
My name's Johnny Dollar.
I am Nita Valdez, Mr. Dollar.
Well, I'm glad to know you, Miss Valdez.
You are the man who arrived on the plane a few minutes ago, no?
I didn't think anyone had heard. The hospitality is overwhelming.
You will become accustomed to it. Everyone here is too occupied with himself to bother concerning anyone else. Like me, I have been too busy sunbathing.
Yes, so I noticed.
If it bothers you, you could hand me my robe.
Oh, no. That won't be necessary.
Sit down, Mr. Dollar.
Thanks.
You have come to see the king about the attempt to steal his necklace?
Apparently, sunbathing hasn't interfered with your learning about that.
You obviously do not know King Rawlings very well.
Why do you say that?
Everyone on this island has been accused of attempting the theft.
Including you?
Why should I be an exception?
Oh, just wondering.
Because I'm young and beautiful, you think perhaps I hold some special place of esteem in King Rawling's affections?
Well, do you?
Can you reach that bottle of suntan lotion?
Yeah, sure.
The back of my shoulders, would you mind? It is a difficult place for me to reach.
Oh, I'll be glad to.
About the necklace, Mr. Dollar, I would not be too concerned about it if I were you.
Oh? Why not?
Well, if anyone has actually made an attempt to steal it, the king knows who he is.
But he's still accused everybody here, huh?
It affords him a great deal of pleasure to make others squirm and be uncomfortable.
You don't like him very much, do you?
I hate him.
Then why do you stay here?
Same reason as everyone else. Money. Oh, that will do nicely, thank you.
You're welcome. Do you mind explaining that bit about money, Miss Valdez?
Later, perhaps. The sun is still warm, and I wish to take advantage of it. We will meet again.
A polite dismissal, if I ever heard one.
You're wondering, perhaps, why I stopped you to talk this way?
The thought had occurred to me, yes.
When you meet the king, get to know him a little, I think you will understand why.
And if I don't?
I sunbathe here every day at this time.
I'll think about that, too. I found that Rawlings, like all good kings, lived in a castle. This one, obviously imported, stone by stone, from some Moorish province. A nervous little man came to the main gate and escorted me inside to the baronial hall.
Harley is my name, Mr. Dollar. Timothy B. Harley. I'm Mr. Rawlings' secretary. In here, please. Mr. Rawlings' study. He'll be down to join you shortly.
Thanks, Mr. Harley.
I presume you're here about the necklace, Mr. Dollar?
A favorite topic of conversation around here, isn't it?
I beg your pardon?
The necklace.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. Well, under the circumstances, you see, the attempted theft and all, it... Has someone else mentioned it to you?
Any reason why they shouldn't?
No, not at all. It was just that, well... Was it Nita Valdez by any chance?
What makes you think so?
Why, nothing. Nothing at all. Only, you see, it was where, to tell you the truth, I've suspected something for a long time. It's come to my attention.
You talk too much, Harley.
Oh, Mr. Rawlings. Oh, I didn't hear you come in. I was just telling...
Get out.
Of course, Mr. Rawlings. Of course.
You're from the insurance company?
That's right. Johnny Dollar.
Why you instead of Marty Fenton?
He's an agent. I'm a special investigator.
I didn't request an investigation.
You made a report of an attempted robbery.
What do you want me to do? Have you declare the policy void because I didn't?
What do you want us to do? Thank you for letting us pay out $250,000 if the necklace turns up missing?
Over here, Dollar. There's the safe I keep it in.
Pretty substantial job.
Fenton supervised the installation himself.
Those scratches near the combination... Those what made you think somebody tried to force it?
Only a hammer and chisel could make those marks.
I'd like to see the necklace.
Boy.
Who do you think was after it?
Either Harley or my protege, Nita Valdez.
Why suspect them?
They love money and hate me.
You care to go into that?
You're investigating the necklace, Dollar, not my relationships with the people on this island. There it is.
Beautiful workmanship.
What else did you expect for $250,000?
A little more than this, Rawlings. I'm no expert on precious stones, but 10 will get you 20 if these aren't paste.
Let me see. You're right, they are.
Any explanations?
None.
You've no idea how the switch was pulled?
I have not.
When was the last time the necklace was appraised?
When the policy was written.
Who else has the combination of this safe?
No one.
Kind of puts you in a spot, doesn't it?
Not at all. I'm insured.
The law says we don't have to pay off on fraudulent claims.
I know. The law also says you have to prove that fraud exists.
I broke the news to Marty via Rawlings' radio phone and looked around for something to improve the shining hours while waiting for him to arrive. I found it. Dressed in a clinging silk gown on a patio overlooking the sea. It was obviously the cocktail hour. Mind if I join you?
Oh, please do.
I can't make up my mind.
To what, Mr. Dollar?
Which shows you off to greater advantage? That dress or the sunset?
For that, you may have a choice of rewards. Scotch or martini?
Nothing, thanks.
Well, what did you think of him?
The king?
Yes.
I'm more interested in what you think of him.
I have already told you.
I know. He confirmed your statement.
That I hate him?
Mm-hmm.
You can believe it.
I do. What I want to know is why.
King Rawlings is a collector.
Stamps, butterflies, out-of-state license plates?
Of people, Mr. Dollar.
How does this fascinating game of his work?
He specializes in aspiring artists with little or no talent. An actress like myself. A would-be poet like Harley. He baits his trap with a promise of money to aid their careers. Keeps them dangling as long as they can amuse him and feed his ego. Then he cuts them off.
Very amusing.
Yes, isn't it?
Well, if you know what he is, why stay on?
Oh, it's much easier to cling even to a remnant of a dream than to face the harshness of reality.
How tough would it be to face reality with $250,000?
The necklace is gone.
Does that surprise you?
No. It was too great a temptation.
For you or Harley?
For either of us, if we had known the combination to that safe. No, Mr. Dollar, it was the king himself who was tempted.
Well, that doesn't figure. Not with his money.
If he still has it.
Why do you think he hasn't?
What other answer could there be?
Might be interesting to try to find out.
Oh, you would be wasting your time, Mr. Dollar.
I've got some to spare.
Perhaps I could find you some.
I don't have any money.
Oh, that was rather cruel.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Dollar, is that you? Oh, yes, of course it is, yes.
Why the excitement, Harley?
Tell me, is it true that the necklace has been stolen?
Looks like it. Why?
I wonder if that could possibly account for it.
For what?
Mr. Rawlings. He's lying on the second floor landing. I think he's dead.
Timothy B. Harley couldn't have been more right. King Rawlings was lying stone cold dead. On the police, I gave them a fast briefing. Marty's reaction was predictable.
Nobody gets off this island until we learn what's happened to that necklace. Right, Captain Fuentes?
Yes, I agree, Senor Fenton. Up to a certain point.
What point? What do you mean?
The good captain apparently feels there might be something more important about all this than a missing necklace.
What could be more important than $250,000 in stolen jewels?
How about murder?
Never entered my mind.
Naturally not. Eastern Indemnity only insured Rawlings Stones, not his life.
I guess I heard that coming.
Senor Dollar is quite correct, however. The cause of Senor Rawlings' death is not apparent at the moment. It will require an autopsy to determine.
And if it's murder?
We must then regard everyone who was present upon this island with suspicion. What help can you give us regarding that, Senor Dollar?
Well, just what I've told you. Outside of the servants, only Harley, Miss Valdez, and I were among those present.
And who was the last to see Senor Rawlings alive?
So far as I know, I was. But Harley could have been with him after Rawlings left me in the study. For that matter, Miss Valdez could have seen him, too, before our little tete-a-tete on the patio.
Look, fellows, me lads, I don't want to appear single-minded about this little affair, but we don't know whether Rawlings was murdered or not. However, we do know Eastern Indemnity's out a cool 250 G's if that necklace doesn't turn up.
Payable, of course, to Senor Rawlings' estate.
Sure, but who cares who it's payable to? What I'm interested in is not paying it.
Thinking of possible motives, Captain?
The heir to Senor Rawlings' fortune might well be suspect.
So would whoever stole the necklace, if Rawlings had tumbled to him.
Then there's always plain hate, isn't there?
You have something specific in mind, Senor Dollar?
Just a suggestion, Captain. Fuentes had his plane fly Rawlings' body back to Havana for posting, while he conducted a very thorough, if unenlightening, questioning of those present. Apparently, no one had seen Rawlings after he left me in the study, had any idea how he died, or what had happened to that necklace. Fuentes knocked off around midnight, and everyone ostensibly went to bed. I still had a few unanswered questions kicking around, so I went up to Harley's room to try them out.
Why, yes, Mr. Dollar. Mr. Rawlings had a will, but as I told Captain Fuentes, it's locked in the safe.
And it'll take a court order and some professional safecrackers to get at it, I know. But what about the copy?
Copy?
It's customary for the attorney who drew it up to retain a copy.
Oh, yes, of course. I hadn't thought. Senor Chavez must have one in Havana.
He's an attorney there?
Yes. As a matter of fact, he handled most of Mr. Rawlings' financial affairs. Well, he must have a copy. Oh, why don't you ask him?
Oh, I will. But first, I'd like to know why you were planning to leave Los Baños.
Leave Los... Well, how did you know?
Well, maybe you can think of another reason for having a half-filled suitcase laying there on your bed.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes. I was planning to leave. No reason why I shouldn't. After all, my employment here has been terminated.
Have you discussed the idea with Captain Fuentes?
Well, no, but why should he object? I'm not guilty of anything.
Just a thought, Harley. Mind if I take a look at that suitcase?
No, don't. Don't touch that. Don't.
Well, what do you know? A brown paper parcel neatly wrapped and tied. You mind telling me what's in it?
It's none of your business. Put that down.
It wouldn't be a necklace by any chance, would it?
Put it down, Dollar.
Oh, sure, right away. Well, now that's interesting. All new, crisp, in $100 denominations. Must be close to $10,000 here.
Well, what of it? It's mine.
Oh, I don't doubt that. I'm just wondering where you got it.
I saved it.
Working for Rawlings?
Yes, why not? I saved it working for Rawlings. It's mine.
Okay, Harley. I don't want it. Don't you really know why Captain Fuentes might object to your leaving now?
No. I most certainly don't.
Remarkable. There wasn't anything I could do before morning rolled around except smoke a last cigarette and try to think things out. So I went out in the same patio where Anita and I had had our talk and lit up. The one cigarette turned into two. Then I started to light a third one. That was a mistake. I saw the muzzle flash. It came from somewhere inside a clump of palm trees. But with a full moon behind me, I wasn't going to get heroic about it. I made a dive for a concrete retaining wall. I didn't think the shots I'd snapped out had done any good, and I had no intention of finding out. Not with that moon lighting things up. So I made myself comfortable with my back to the wall and waited for the Cuban Marines in the person of Captain Fuentes to come charging to the rescue. Some 15 minutes later, Marty, the captain, and I held a council of war on our way down to the landing docks.
I found these two empty shells under one of the palm trees, Senor Dollar. But that was all. No trace of the person who fired them.
What about Harley?
He's not in his room. So far, I've been unable to locate him.
Well, hardly seems reasonable, Johnny. What could be so important about that money you saw to make him want to kill you?
I don't know that he did, Marty. But I'd like to ask him a couple of questions about it.
But why come down here to the boathouse, senor?
Well, with your plane gone, there's only one way off this island. Rawlings speedboats. We'd better make sure they're locked up tight.
One of the slips is empty.
It wasn't when I got here.
We heard no motor, senor.
Well, that's nothing that a paddle and a pair of willing arms can't explain.
Harley?
That's my guess.
Then it's 10-1 he has the necklace with him.
Expense account item 2, $5.65. Breakfast for two in Havana, where Martin Fenton and I found the bougainvillea and the tourist rates in full bloom. We wanted to talk to Senor Chavez, Rawlings' lawyer. And after a rough trip on one of the speedboats and that rougher breakfast tab, we made our way to his office.
See, I have a copy of Senor Rawlings' will, but you understand I cannot disclose its contents until the court so order.
But we don't want any details, Senor Chavez.
Huh? But I understood you were inquiring about beneficiaries.
All we want to know is if he left anything to a Timothy Harley or Anita Valdez.
I see.
Well, we've explained the circumstances, Senor Chavez. It can't violate any professional ethics to give us a yes or no to those two names.
No, I do not believe it is unethical to tell you this much. No individuals were named in the will.
Only charitable and public welfare institutions.
Well, that eliminates the heir apparent angle, Johnny.
One more thing, Senor Chavez. There have been rumors that Rawlings' fortune was almost gone. Any truth to them?
Not a bit. All his investments were most judiciously placed. He was perhaps wealthier at the time of his death than at any time during his life.
Well, you've been a big help. Thanks.
For now, it is an attorney's duty to obey the law, is it not? Any time you are here in Havana, please to stop in. It would be my pleasure.
I will do, Senor Chavez, and thanks again. Well, that was a great help.
I cleaned up some loose ends.
It's a loose necklace I'm worried about, Johnny. Where do we go from here?
Well, we can check out the local police, see if they've picked up anything on Harley.
Good as anything, I guess. Oh, which way?
We passed it on the way up here.
Senor Dollar, it is most fortunate that you're still here. There's a phone call for you in my office from the island of Los Baños.
Oh, thanks, Senor Chavez.
There, on my desk, senor.
Johnny Dollar.
This is Captain Puente, Senor Dollar. I have some information for you.
Oh? What is it, Captain?
First of all, the autopsy report on Senor Rawlings has come in.
Natural death?
Si, that is correct. From an old aggravated heart condition. But how did you know?
No real reason for anybody to murder him. What else?
We have found Senor Harley's body at the north end of the island. Apparently his motor stopped and the surf dashed him against the rocks. His skull was fractured.
You didn't find the necklace on him?
No, but he is the one who stole it.
What makes you think so?
In his wallet, we found a slip of paper, senor. On it was written the combination of the safe.
Expense account item 3, $35. Transportation of speedboat back to Los Bernas. With Captain Fuente's report, there was no need to report directly to the island, and Marty was anxious to get back to the office and bring you up to date. So he chartered a plane, and we took off for Miami.
Well, Johnny, my lad, we chalk up another happy collaboration, huh?
Yeah, you might call it that, Marty.
A king there was. You know, somehow I don't think Rawlings was a very happy man with all his dough. Holed up on that island, nothing but hate around him.
Well, money's not the answer to everything.
No, but as the saying goes, it sure helps. But then I guess it didn't help Harley much either. I wonder if we'll ever find that necklace.
It'll turn up.
Pretty optimistic, aren't you?
No, I'm sure of it.
Well, come on, Johnny, give. Where do you think it is?
Right there in your briefcase.
It's not a very funny gag, Johnny.
No, Marty, it's not.
And how about changing the snapper?
I wish I could, Marty. But it figured all along.
You didn't act like it.
Looking for every possible loophole, I guess. But they all closed up on me.
Where did I slip?
Where they all slip. At the very beginning. When you first thought of it.
What tipped you?
Rawlings swore that only he knew the combination of that safe. He was wrong. One other man knew it. The one who supervised its installation.
I should have known you'd tumble to that.
The paste pinned it down even closer, Marty. The reproduction was too good. No wonder. You had every descriptive detail in your copy of the policy. Weights, dimensions, photographs, everything.
I didn't go back to the island, Johnny. How could I make the switch?
That's where Harley came in. You slipped him the combination and he made the switch. That's why the $10,000 payoff. And why you had to kill him. And frame it as an accident.
Maybe I should have killed you too when I had the chance on the patio.
You've still got your gun?
Nah. What's the use? It was wrong all the way. Besides, I never could outshoot you.
Expense account item 4, $32.15. Hotel bill and incidentals in Miami. Item 5, $141.10. Plane fare and incidentals back to Hartford. Expense account total, $348.60. Remarks, with all due deference to my chosen profession, sometimes this is a lousy business. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, stars John Lund in the title role and was written by Sidney Marshall with music by Milton Charles.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday from March 17, 1953 on CBS. Also on the radio that day were comedy broadcasts of People Are Funny with Art Linkletter, Fibber McGee and Molly on NBC, and on ABC, a quarter hour with reporter Charles Collingwood, who described an atom bomb test from Yucca Flats, Nevada. You're listening to An Hour of Mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for a syndicated episode of Danger with Granger from 1956 called A Promise of Rain.
Danger with Granger.
14 gallons, sir, and 2 quarts of oil.
Okay.
That'll be, 407.
Yeah.
Out of $5. Your change, sir.
Thanks.
Up here working on a case, Mr. Granger?
You know me, sonny?
You bet. I'm a great follower of mysteries. Saw your picture in the paper a few weeks ago. Got it pinned up right here in the station.
Wow.
You working on a case right now, Mr. Granger?
Nope, just driving back from Albany.
Well, have a good trip, Mr. Granger.
Thanks, kid. I was feeling pretty peaceful driving along. Highway 9W was in perfect shape. The night was warm and a few clouds hid the moon. I was just about 3 miles south of the little town of Esopus when I saw the lights creep up from behind me. The car was moving along like a bat out of a haunted cave. I edged over to give it plenty of passing room. By this time, a fine mist was clouding my windshield. It started to rain. The other vehicle had pulled up alongside and started to edge me off the road. Hey, look out, you chump! You're running me off the road! Look out! This is Steve Granger, private detective, with a story about a car crash which turned out to be a prelude to murder. I should have known I was feeling too happy driving along the highway. When that car crept up from behind and suddenly swerved towards me, I had to think fast. My car skidded off the road and came to rest nudging its nose against a drain that bisected the ditch. I wasn't in the best of tempers as I got out, but the rain didn't help.
Gee, are you all right?
No thanks to you, pal. Didn't anybody tell you it's a one-way trip to the cemetery driving when drunk?
I'm not drunk.
Hey, those slacks had me fooled for a minute. I never did like them on women.
Really, Mr. Granger?
Say, it looks like I'm really well known around these parts.
But I had to stop you. I had to.
You did, baby? Look at the front of that car.
Well, I'll pay for it. Don't worry.
Kind of you. Mind explaining why you had to stop me?
Well, I stopped back in that filling station at Esopus just after you. When I heard you were in the vicinity, I knew that you were just the man for the job.
What job?
Would you come to Esopus with me? I'd rather explain things.
Baby. First, I want to know who you are.
Well, my name is Letty Farron. I've been working for two men, and I'm sure they're both swindlers, and those poor farmers will lose millions of dollars, and I'm all mixed up in it, and you've just got to stop them, that's all.
That's enough. Let me catch up a little on these swindlers and the poor farmers, and what's the gag?
It's Mr. Allerfield and Mr. Harris. They put on this display at a county fair a few weeks ago, and now they've got all the farmers believing it.
Believing what?
That they can make rain.
Looks like they overdid it. This begins to look like a cloudburst.
Mr. Granger, I want you to come up where they're going to put on this demonstration. I know you can prove that they're swindlers. Mr. Granger, where are you going?
Judging from the front end of my car, no place. I'm going to stand here and let it rain on me.
Well, let me drive you back to town. We can send out a tow truck to bring in your car.
Okay, baby, but I'll drive. Let's get in out of this wet. You know, there's something I don't get about this. If you're sure your two employers are crooks, why haven't you told the local police?
Because I'm afraid I'd be killed.
I took a good look at Letty Farron. She was a prim-looking girl in her late 20s. She really sounded as though she meant it about being killed. We made it back to the gas station. I left instructions for the kid who'd like mysteries to pick up my car and do things to it. Then we headed for the small town of Esopus and Letty Farron's hotel and a welcome cup of coffee. I still don't get it. What does a hostess do at a rainmaking exhibition?
While I was just around, I answered questions about the rainmaking equipment.
Uh-huh. How come your bosses want to kill you?
Well, I'll tell you the whole thing. It all started earlier tonight when I went over to Mr. Allerfield's house. I usually go in the back door through the kitchen, and as I drew close, I could hear Mr. Allerfield and Mr. Harris talking. I was just inside the kitchen, and I could hear their voices clearly.
Of course the thing's a fake. But if we can take these yokels, so what?
I agree with you, Allerfield. How'll we make the pitch?
Well, I've got a connection with somebody who's got an in with the New York Weather Bureau. Uh-huh. He's wiring me daily. We'll pick a good one.
Oh, too bad we didn't pick today. Oh, just a minute. I want to get something out of the kitchen. All right, Miss Farron. What are you doing out here?
I was on my way in, Mr. Harris.
No, I'm not so sure you were.
What's going on out there, Harris? Who's with you?
A snooper. Come on, you.
You're hurting my arm.
Miss Farron.
Yes, listening to our conversation.
Let me go.
You're staying here until we find out a few things.
How much did you hear, Miss Farron? No answer, huh?
She heard plenty, don't worry.
No doubt.
I think we should come to an arrangement with Miss Farron, don't you?
I'll continue with this interesting story in a minute. Letty Farron was pretty convincing as she told me about the way her two employers had grabbed her. Sitting there in a small room with a cup of coffee going cold in front of her, she was one scared girlie.
They said if I opened my mouth, they'd kill me or frame me.
How?
Well, I work for them. Frame me would be simple.
Yeah, I guess it would. Just what do you think I can do about this situation?
Well, Mr. Allerfield wants all the money he can get. If you got in touch with him, told him that you had money to invest, he'd fall hook, line, and sinker.
How do I get him?
Well, call him on the phone. Pretend you've heard about this marvelous invention.
Yeah, might work.
Just mention money. That'll do it.
I thought the whole thing was sillier than a May Day parade, but here I was, stuck in a small town waiting for repairs on a car. Besides, Letty Farron was a cute number. You can take any digit from 1 to 10. I called Allerfield. He took the bait. So I told the girl to wait for me at a hotel room and went over to see him.
Well, Mr. Granger, seems that my partner and I are becoming quite famous.
I heard about your invention around Albany. Farmers up there are very interested.
It's a very wonderful thing, really. Uses the electronic principle of making rain.
Well, the electronic principle? So something new, huh?
Oh, certainly. You didn't think we are using such outmoded methods as sowing clouds with dry ice. We have what we call our electronic bombardment system.
Uh-huh.
We can place rain clouds directly over any specified area with this electronic system.
Yeah, well, what makes the rain?
That is our second process. Both extremely hush-hush, you know. We're very close to Washington.
Oh.
This heat ray equipment, although I use the word heat ray loosely, is also based on newly developed electronic principles. By using some of the new vacuum tubes, we have succeeded in creating a thin heat ray consisting of a different type of electron than used in the cloud controlling equipment.
This is all very intriguing, Mr. Allerfield.
I'm very glad you think so. By the way, when you called, you mentioned being interested in the financial end of the enterprise.
Yes, I am.
Well, of course, the local man had been more than slightly interested, so our financial structure is quite, shall we say, adequate.
Oh, that's too bad, because I would like to invest some money with you.
Well, however, we might be able to make an arrangement. I'd like to have a man of your stature in the company.
Well, thank you.
Now, just how much of an investment did you have in mind?
Oh, I was thinking... Look out! I'd seen the hand move through the window, but my shout of warning came a fraction of a second too late. I moved towards the window, but the person who killed Allafield had vanished. I wondered what the local police department was like, but decided before doing anything to take a chance and check with Letty Farron first.
Oh, did you get anything out of him, Mr. Granger? Doesn't he act like a swindler? Mr. Granger, what's wrong?
Your ex-boss, Mr. Allafield, was just getting ready to talk money when somebody stuck a gun through the open window and let him have it. He's dead, Miss Farron.
Dead?
You know anything about the local police?
Well, there's a sheriff, that's all.
Know his name?
No.
Right, you stay here. I'll be back in a little while.
You're telling the sheriff what happened?
I certainly am. I love my license. I left the hotel and walked down to the corner where the lad who'd brought in my car had his filling station. He was hard at work.
Hiya, Mr. Granger. Have her just as good as new by noon tomorrow, Mr. Granger.
Don't tell me you're going to work all night on that car.
Oh, sure. Got to see that you get your transportation. Besides, I've got a kid who works for me during the day.
Uh-huh. Say, you know the sheriff here?
Sure. Why? Something come up?
Well, I'd like to talk to him about a little matter.
Well, he's not here tonight. Went fishing. Be back tomorrow.
Yeah. Who's his assistant?
I am. I'm the deputy sheriff around here.
In that case, you'd better put down your tools and come with me. I got a little surprise for you. The boy went inside to get out of his overalls while I started feeding nickels into the phone. I wanted to call Cal Hendricks, my newspaper pal, and let him know where I was. Cal, this is Steve Granger.
Hi, Stevie boy. What's your trouble?
I'm up in a small town near the Catskills. There's a rainmaking routine going on up here.
Well, shut it off. It's flooding the joint down here.
It's raining in New York?
Definitely.
It's the same. This racket smells like swindle. Also, there's a dead man involved. His name is Allafield. He was one of the promoters.
Want me to check him for you?
Yeah, call Fogarty down at the bureau. Stand by for another call. The sheriff up here is out of town. His only deputy is just a kid.
So what?
I was with Allafield when he was shot. The boy deputy doesn't know it yet.
Fine. When he finds out, I'll send you up a Danish pastry with a saw in it.
A witty guy, this Mr. Hendricks. Well, there was no mistake about it. This could be a mighty tricky situation for a private detective in a small town. I hung up after talking to Cal Hendricks and turned around to wait for the kid from the filling station. The kid who also happened to be deputy sheriff. He wasn't long showing up.
I'm ready to go, Mr. Granger.
Okay.
Where are we going?
No man named Allafield.
That phony?
What makes you say that?
Because he's kidding all the farmers that he can make rain.
Don't you think he can?
I think he and that Mr. Harris are both crooks. They won't let me examine their equipment.
You an expert?
I am. In electronics. Why, I've even got my own radio station.
You have?
Of course, I'm only what they call a ham operator. But I talk all over the world, and I build my own stuff. That's why they won't let me look at their junk.
You might come in very handy,
I'm Jerry Peasley.
Glad to meet you, Jerry.
Oh, here's Allafield's house. Gosh, aren't you even going to knock?
It won't be necessary, Jerry. At least the light works out here in the hall.
You know a lot about this place.
I know more than that, Jerry. Take a look over there on the floor.
What's Mr. Allafield?
Somebody shot him, boy. I was sitting here with him. The killer got away in the dark.
Did you kill him, Mr. Granger?
Of course not.
Just the same, I'm going to have to ask you not to leave town.
Yeah. I kind of thought you would. We got the local doctor who doubled as a coroner to make an examination and remove the body. I told Jerry he could find me at the hotel. I wanted to talk more with Letty Farron.
The sheriff isn't in town, is he, Mr. Granger?
How do you know?
Well, after you left, I got nervous and I followed you. I had to know what was going on. I'm frightened because whoever killed Mr. Allafield might want to kill me, too.
Why? After all, it was Allerfield who threatened you.
Yes, I know that, but... That's the police. Come on, you can climb out the window and get away.
Are you out of your head? I'm going to see who it is. What do you want?
I'm Thomas Peasley, editor of the local paper. I just heard about Mr. Allerfield's untimely demise.
Jerry Peasley is your son, huh?
No, I want to hear your story, Mr. Granger. So, good evening, Miss Farron.
Hello.
Your boy must have given you all the details.
And you, a licensed private detective, just sat there and let this happen.
I'm just a private eye, not a seeing eye, Mr. Peasley. My back was to the window.
Very convenient, Mr. Granger.
You know, I'm beginning to dislike your attitude, editor. Mind explaining that last crack?
Mr. Allerfield and Mr. Harris were both highly respected in this community. The farmers hereabouts hold them in high regard. Their research work on proper rainfall is much appreciated.
You still haven't explained that last remark, Peasley.
The rainmaking secret is a very valuable one. Perhaps, just perhaps, somebody else might be after that secret. If the farmers were to get the idea that you were trying to defraud them or steal the secret, nobody could be responsible for your personal safety.
In one phrase, get out of town, is that it?
Yes.
Peasley, how come your own son thinks Allerfield and Harris are palming off a fake on the farmers?
My son is a headstrong youngster who, because he bought a few pieces of surplus radio equipment and can therefore talk to Chicago, now considers himself an accomplished electronics engineer. I would suggest that you be ready to leave town by the time my son repairs your conveyance.
Your son, as a deputy sheriff, told me to stay here.
You do as I say, or my son will find himself in the woodshed with his father.
Mr. Granger, what are you going to do?
Hang around and see what happens.
But that horrible Mr. Peasley, you know, he could be mixed up in the swindle, too.
And you could be right, Miss Farrell. Oh,
who's that?
It looks like farmers. They're mad about something.
Mr. Peasley, I'll bet he told them that you were here.
Looks like I'll have to take it out the window. You stay here, Miss Farron. I'm going back to Allerfield's house. I should be back inside an hour. If I'm not, call this man at this number in New York.
Yes.
And tell him to come running. I dropped to the ground outside the window, took a quick look around, and started up the street towards Jerry Peasley's filling station. It was pretty late at night. Allerfield's murder had wakened the town, and the people were growling around like bee-stung bulldogs.
Hiya, Mr. Granger.
Hiya, Jerry. Want to use your phone. Got to call New York.
You're still working on the Allerfield murder?
Maybe.
I've got a right to know, you know. I'm the deputy. I have to report to the sheriff. He's on his way back.
You get in touch with him?
My dad did. He thinks you killed Allerfield.
Nuts. I put in another call to Cal Hendricks. He was a slick guy. Had quite a lot of information. Why not? He always helped me out because he knew he could hold me up for the story later. Cal liked to scoop more than ordinary guys like money.
Yes. Yeah, Steve, I got after it for you. There's quite a brochure on that guy, Allerfield.
Okay, so let's hear the dirt.
He's been mixed up in plenty of neat little confidence tricks like his latest effort. Some time ago, he was peddling a seeding device to farmers down south. Did very nicely for himself, thank you. And then there was a method of piping irrigation water without pipes in the Middle West. And several more.
Oh, the real inventive type, huh?
Uh-huh. Hey, you watch out for him, Stevie. He's the kind that'll take the shirt off your back while you're talking to him and sell it back to you at cut rates.
I decided it was time I had a word with the late Mr. Allerfield's partner, Mr. Harris. Jerry Peasley told me he lived in a small house right on the rainmaking site, so I headed that way.
Mr. Granger. Mr. Granger.
Miss Farron, didn't I tell you to stay in that hotel room?
Well, I couldn't. Those farmers hanging around scared me.
How'd you know where I was?
Well, Jerry told me. Hop in, I'll drive you to wherever you're going.
Harris's place, huh?
Yes.
Now, you stay in the car, you understand? I don't want you prowling around in the dark.
I'm not worried so long as you're nearby.
Thanks.
Mr. Granger. Put up your hands and turn around.
Okay, Harris. I expected a caper like this.
I'm very glad you came here, Granger. Saved me the trouble of coming to you.
I'm not flattered.
I thought you might be less harmful if you were out of the way for a day or two.
Until you complete the swindle, huh?
I'll take your gun. Now, walk over to that far door. You know, you're figuring out too much. Open the door.
Now what?
This!
Harris merely reversed his gun and started whapping me around the ears. My hands grew as numb as my head. I lost my balance, and that was that. When the cotton cleared out of my skull, I found myself lying on the damp floor of a cellar, tied hands and feet. It wasn't hard to figure out what was going to happen. Harris would build a frame with me as the nucleus and feed me to the farmers.
Granger.
Who is it?
Betty Farron. Don't make a sound.
Okay.
I thought something like this would happen. Here, let me cut you free. There. There you are. Almost as good as me.
Thanks. Where's Harris?
Upstairs. I think he's getting ready to leave town.
And I'm the man who's putting the roadblock in his way. Say, how'd you get in here anyway?
There's a cellar door.
Good. Wait for me in the car.
Maybe I could help.
You could also get hurt. Now scram. I looked around the cellar for a weapon, but the place was empty of anything except a cardboard cracker carton, and that hardly made a weapon. My only chance was to surprise Harris. The upper door had been left open, and I moved towards the rectangle of light as quietly as the traditional mouse. Harris was standing within 3 feet, with his back to me, searching for something. I moved forward. He heard me, but just too late. Drop that gun, Harris.
No, no, I...
Drop it, I said.
You make me...
Hey, the lights! Suddenly, the living room of Harris's house was as black as the ace of spades. With a lot of fumbling, I finally found a switch. The lights came on and showed me Harris lying dead on the floor. I went back to where Letty Farron was waiting in a car. As I climbed in, I felt something on the seat. It was the girl's purse. And there was something in it which made things just that much clearer. Get this car moving, Letty. I want that sheriff.
The sheriff?
Get it rolling.
Mr. Harris, is he...
You know all about it, baby, so don't ask.
Know all about it? Well, what do you mean?
You can stop feeling around the seat for your purse because I got it.
Give that to me.
It's got a gun in it, baby. A gun with a warm barrel. How do you explain that? It's been fired just a minute ago, too. You're in trouble, Letty Farron. Harris's gun went off only once during our battle. The second shot came from this gadget.
Give me that!
Keep your hands on the wheel, stupid. You'll wreck us. Hello, what are we back here? Traveling bag. Interesting.
Granger.
Ah, that must have the dough your two pals took from the farmers. You had it all planned, huh? Drop me off. No one would ever see Letty Farron or the money again.
All right, Granger. That bag does have the money in it. Look, there's $100,000 there. Those farmers paid it all in. Now, how about a deal, a 50-50 split?
Sure. Pull up right here.
But this is that kid's filling station.
You'll be safe, Miss Farron. Pull up. Jerry!
Yeah, Mr. Granger?
Sheriff in yet?
No.
Oh, here's a chance to make your first arrest. Miss Letty Farron, for the murder of Allafield and Harris.
I could kill you.
Sure. You got the chance. But you won't, baby. Well, friends, that's the story. I'll be back to wrap up the case in just a minute. Well, that was that. When the sheriff got back and the questioning of Letty Farron got underway, it was clear that she'd intended to steal from Allafield and Harris right from the first. The money was returned to the farmers, and Miss Farron was locked up. That left Peasley, the gullible country editor, in the clear. But young Jerry Peasley was still not satisfied.
I'm going to prove to you that I know what I'm talking about, Mr. Granger. And if those farmers had listened to me, they'd have run Allenfield and Harris right out of town.
Sure, kid.
Yeah. Now, take this thing here. The one Allenfield called his electronic cloud guide.
Yeah?
You know what it is?
Well, not exactly.
Actually, this is a T-26 APT-2 radar transmitter operating on 420 megacycles using 703A tubes. Any dope can see that.
Yeah.
And this other heat ray thing, Mr. Granger. That's just a C-1 autopilot amplifier that's been used to control the operation of servo units. That couldn't make rain.
Oh, obviously not, no.
But give me 10 minutes, and I can rebuild them so that we can talk to Chicago.
Oh, fine.
After all, I'm a ham.
Yeah, but not in the way people understand the word. Steve Granger again. You've just heard one of the most interesting cases in my files. And I'll have another one for you. So be around next time.
Danger with Granger, on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated episode from 1956, wrapping up this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. And until our next hour together, I'm Mark Lipponier. Thanks for listening.